is an Odyssey original.
This is KNX In Depth. I'm Rob Archer.
And I'm Chris Edens, in today for Charles Feldman. Television icon Jerry Springer has died. We'll go in depth into the show's long-lasting legacy.
Another diabetes drug could change the weight loss world. Also, couples are splitting up but not leaving each other. We'll explain what that's all about.
We start, though, with the legacy of Jerry Springer. Michael Schneider is a Variety's TV editor. He joins us now on In Depth. Also, Bert DeBrow, who created and was the executive producer of the Jerry Springer Show, really started the show. Bert, let's start with you. What I think a lot of people didn't know about Jerry Springer, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but he started his talk show with you wanting it to be a very serious issues-oriented program, but apparently that was a ratings flop. He then found that going over the top turned out to be a ratings hit, and he really did change the TV landscape by doing what he did.
Was that a question? Because you just gave great information.
Well, let me just ask you. I'm asking you, first of all, off the top. I'm asking you if there's truth to that. There's your question.
There's a little nuance to that. We were same company that owned the Phil Donahue show, and Donahue was thinking about retiring at that time, or at least talking about it. And Jerry, I knew Jerry from Cincinnati when I was there originally, and thought to myself, God, he'd be perfect. So I went to the company. I was producing the Sally Jesse Raphael show at the time, and we were on the air about 5 or 6 years. I went to the company and essentially told them my idea. And to make a long story short, that is what happened. Yes, we were doing a show very similar to Phil. And one day, by sheer accident, everybody has a story about this, but I was there, and this is true. We never had a meeting and say, hell, why don't we do fights, and that way the ratings will go up. It didn't happen that way at all. We had happened to be doing a show on race, and a fight broke out. We actually stopped the tape, frankly, and calmed the audience down. And frankly, Jerry and I had to calm down because we had never seen anything like that before. And we continued the show. And the next day we looked at the overnights and went, oh my gosh, look at this. And then we sat and thought, this is interesting. And that's how it began.
Michael, this question to you, obviously kind of a change in the TV afternoon talk show model. But also, it did have an effect on culture, did it not?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You started to see a lot of these shows in the 90s, especially. It was before reality TV became a thing. So this was reality TV before reality TV, where it was real-life people doing crazy things on air. And as these shows progressed, things got crazier and crazier. And, at some point, nothing really surprised anyone anymore, including Jerry, who embraced the fun of it. I think never took it seriously, but enjoyed the fact that it was a sort of mindless entertainment, a way for viewers to sort of break away and enjoy this ridiculousness for at least an hour every day.
Bert, what was Jerry like off the screen?
Well, that's been asked of me a lot, certainly, and rightly so. I have two answers. One, I would always say, if you wanted to find Jerry, look for him. He'll be in a restaurant by himself reading War and Peace. That's the first answer. And the second one is, you watched the show and saw The Final Thought. That's really who Jerry was. I mean, The Final Thought, just so you know, came from the idea he was doing the news and doing editorials. And when we started this show, I said to Jerry, we got to find a way to get that in there somehow. And we just came up with sort of switching the word editorial and calling it A Final Thought. And it became sort of a thing on the Springer Show. But that's really, really who he was. And you're right. You guys are right. He never took it seriously. He always had fun with it. And I think that's why it worked. Because he never looked at Jerry and thought, oh, my God, does he really think this is, this is serious? And he didn't. He used to say, frankly, I remember we did one of the first interviews we ever did was the Today Show with Katie Couric. And she asked him something similar. And he looked at her right in the face and said, Katie, it's a stupid show. I wouldn't watch it. And he would he sort of broke everybody down that way.
All right. Thank you so much to our guests. That was Bert DeBrow, creator and executive producer of The Jerry Springer Show. Also, Michael Schneider, Variety's TV editor. Thanks so much for joining us.
Right now, though, another diabetes drug has been found by drug maker Eli Lilly to help people lose weight. And Dr. Michael Tarani is a Southern California-based geriatric specialist who treats diabetes patients. He's also on the medical board of U.S. News and World Report. Doctor, thank you for taking some time for us today. This is the second diabetes drug that can apparently help people lose weight. Is the future of weight loss now in the form of a simple pill or an injection?
Good afternoon. These medications, they cause about 10% weight loss in about 6 months, 15% of weight loss in about one year. And it's one of these drugs that, just like how you take regular blood pressure medicine all the time to keep the blood pressure low, or you take regular cholesterol meds every day to keep the cholesterol low, these new medications, they're medications that you would be taking every day to keep the weight down. Should you stop taking the medicine, studies have shown that you do gain around 2/3 of the weight back. So this would be a lifelong medication to keep the weight down.
So is it then better to, rather than taking a pill for the rest of your life, to just exercise for the rest of your life and watch what you eat?
That's optimum, but sometimes you need that extra help, and these medications come into those where they just need that. You need that extra tool in addition to the diet and exercise. It's not a magic pill where if you take this, you don't have to do anything else. This is a tool in addition to the diet and exercise.
And doctor, this is a diabetes drug. Are there any dangers in taking this medication, say, if you don't have diabetes?
It can cause it, like every medicine, there can be side effects. Particularly this medication has a side effect, can have side effects of nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, abdominal pain. Some other studies show that it can cause inflammation of the pancreas or gallbladder disease. Recent studies even show it can possibly cause thyroid cancer. And definitely in young or age-bearing ladies, there has been studies that shown it can harm babies. So definitely not taking it if someone is going to be or is pregnant.
So this is an off-label use. It was not created for that, but doctors find it is successful at treating something else. I think the most famous drug that's got a lot of off-label use is Viagra. But are there times you think doctors and researchers and pharmaceutical engineers look at drugs to try to find out if they do have another off-label use, because that will increase sales?
Yeah, so a lot of times these medications, you don't, for example, when you bring up Viagra, for example, when you bring up finasteride, for example, which is Propecia, when they gave it to patients that had an enlarged prostate, they noticed that the patients are now growing hair, but it was intended for an enlarged prostate. So the side effect turned out to be growing hair, and then it became, so then they used the medication for hair growth, now called Propecia. When you look at this medication, what happened is they gave it to patients, and what they noticed is it slows down digestion. And when digestion is slowed down, it's kind of like you're eating your food slowly. So you don't get hungry as fast. Therefore, you eat less. And when you eat less, you lose weight. And Wegovy, this medication, the Ozempic, is for diabetes, but the Wegovy, which is a higher dose of this medication, is the component of the weight, is used for obesity and weight loss. The same way as finasteride is used for prostate, Propecia, the same drug called now Propecia at a lower dose is called Propecia for hair growth. This medication, Ozempic, is used for diabetes, but at a different dose, it's called Wegovy, which is used for weight loss.
Do you recommend this drug to some of your patients? And I also wonder, do many of your patients or some of your patients request it?
A lot of people are requesting it these days, and hence why there's a shortage of it. But when you think about it, the alternative of it may be a bariatric surgery, So before you talk about surgery or go down the line of surgery, you'd obviously want to do everything you can that's least invasive. So the first line would be diet and exercise as much as you can. And if that doesn't work, you add on an extra tool of this medication. And if these two can do it, great. You saved your patient from having to do bariatric surgery. So it can potentially save a patient from having to go through surgery.
All right. Thanks so much. Dr. Michael Tehrani on the medical board for U.S. News & World Report.
Coming up, a new type of divorce is picking up in popularity. A new kind of divorce, but it doesn't involve leaving your partner. We will explain.
Right now, though, Sierra Madre, it's up in the foothills of the San Gabriel Mountains near Pasadena, has passed a resolution declaring that urban bears are a threat to public safety. So with us now to talk about it is Glenn Lambden, former mayor of Sierra Madre, also Edward Garcia, current mayor of Sierra Madre. Thank you both for joining us today. So my first question to the current mayor of Sierra Madre, what has his accomplished declaring bears a threat to public safety? How do the bears react to that?
Well, we saw this morning that there was at least one trash can that was bear-proof turned upside down in the street, so they're not too happy.
Former Mayor Lambden, how do you come down on this?
Well, I support the resolution. I think it's real important to understand what the problem actually is and how we identify that before we find a solution. But I think it's important that we recognize, for example, like during the 20-year period between 1975 and 95, the entire state of California suffered 7 bear attacks in that 20-year period. And that's over the entire state, 164,000 square miles. Now, if we contrast that with Sierra Madre, which we are just 3 square miles, we've recognized 4 bear attacks in about a 4-year period. And what we're finding is that instead of gaining any type of willingness of the California Department of Fish and Wildlife to reduce the population, all they're doing as best is trying to sell us a coexistence strategy. And that just isn't going to work. The reason that we have these urbanized bears is because the Fish and Wildlife, over that 20-year period, they failed to manage the bear populations in the natural habitat, allowing the bears to increase beyond what the wilderness could sustain, forcing these bears into urban areas. Now we have like a decade of urbanized bears, several generations deep, that are incapable of surviving in the wilderness. So now they dig in the trash, they roam the streets, they become just garbage scavengers. And we're trying to find a solution that's in the best interest for the bears and also what's in the best interest of public safety.
But isn't part of the problem that you are living in an area where bears are, where they do come down, and granted there are some situations that are causing the bears to kind of range a little bit further out, but that can also happen naturally. If there's drought or if there's a problem with, the food they want to eat and stuff, they're going to come down and range across a wider area. So the issue is living in an area where there are bears, just like people who live in areas in high wildfire danger, they can't really be surprised that they have to deal with wildfires, right?
Well, we can be surprised when we consider the mismanagement that led to this problem. To say that the bears were here first is dishonest. And again, we have to look at what caused the problem. So we have to go back to 20 years when the Fish and Wildlife stopped managing the bear population in the wilderness, allowing it to grow beyond what the wilderness could sustain, forcing it down the bear population into well-established residential neighborhoods. And it's somewhat absurd to think that established residential neighborhoods should host the exact same bears Fish and Wildlife were unwilling and unable to manage. I mean, how far down are we going to say we're going to allow the bears? 210 Freeway, the Arboretum? This urban habitat has expanded beyond what they can control. Their own biologists say that the urban bear population has increased exponentially. And the best thing they are offering us are PowerPoint presentations and a few suggestions how to eliminate attractants and food sources. However, they never analyzed what will be the unwelcome consequences of those, which are now that the bears cannot get into our garbage cans, they become more aggressive coming into our homes, coming into our children's school campuses.
Now, we should point out we did reach out to California Fish and Wildlife. We were given a statement which says, in part, the department has been very active within the city of Sierra Madre. It goes on to say its policies are based on sound science that are well thought out and reasonable. And it says that it will continue as an organization to provide support and response to Sierra Madre's human-bear conflicts. Mayor Garcia, maybe your response to what we heard from Fish and Wildlife.
Yeah, so, we're doing our part here. We've listened to their science, and we continue to encourage our residents to follow their recommendations and suggestions. We have kind of looking at the problem holistically. When Senate Bill 1383 passed, that's reducing the organic waste, and basically you're putting waste not in bags, and you're putting them directly in your green waste cans. We knew that that was going to exacerbate the problem here in Sierra Madre. So what did we do? We sat down with our local trash hauler and we negotiated a contract to get every resident in our city a bear-proof trash can. We've actually enacted ordinances to make it illegal to purposefully or even implicitly feed the bears. There could be a fine. We have a wildlife management program that we approved last year. We're doing everything in our power in order to change our behavior and have our residents change their behavior. But the problem keeps getting worse. And I can give you guys some numbers if you want regarding what's been happening and why we feel as a council it is becoming a public safety issue.
Quickly, right. Quickly, we're a little tight on time.
Yeah, we don't want to dig too deep into the weeds there, but the bear is a problem for a lot of people living in Sierra Madre, and we want to thank our guests for being on with us on today's In Depth. The current mayor, Edward Garcia, the former mayor, Glenn Lambden.
You're listening to KNX In Depth with Rob Archer. I'm Chris Sedens, and today for Charles Feldman.
Well, Tucker Carlson has broken his silence after being fired by Fox News.
Yeah, he posted a 2-minute video on Twitter slamming both political parties, claiming they shut down debate. Eric Mitchell is a Republican strategist, and he's a president and CEO of Life Flip Media. He joins us now in In-Depth. Eric, thank you for taking some time for us today. After this video, I think many might wonder if Tucker Carlson might have a future, possibly might be considering a future, not in TV, but in politics, running himself. Do you see that?
You know, that's what I've been hearing. I was hearing this before the whole, you know, Bloody Monday in media, as people have called beginning of Monday when we lost Don Lemon and Tucker in the same day. I was hearing, you know, we already saw Tucker with those ties to obviously former President Trump, but you saw yesterday, which is amazing, there's a lot of people standing behind Tucker, and he slammed both parties like you let in with, which is different, and it sounded really political. It didn't sound like a guy who was planning on going back on TV. It sounded like he wants to do something different, and he has the following to do some damage, and we can't take away from that. Remember, we used to say, oh, we'll never have that, but we all have elected a reality TV star and a former governor of California. So anything is possible, you know, and he was a movie star, Ronald Reagan, and of course, President Trump. So you never know. We could get a controversial TV host to be a president of our country.
Yeah, that is a possibility. There are some similarities, but there are some differences, too. Ronald Reagan, as you said, was a movie star. He was not a political commentator as such. And also, you've got Donald Trump, who was not a political commentator, unless you count what he was doing on social media prior to when he finally decided to run for president. But all that said, and granted, Tucker Carlson has a huge following, but just because it worked in the cases of Donald Trump and Ronald Reagan does not always translate well. You might have a big following, but a lot of times, if you look back in history, that does not translate to political success. Just recently, look at how many of the candidates that the really far right-wing media got behind, and they did terrible in the last election. Could Tucker Carlson face that same kind of problem where, like, I've got all these followers, why am I not succeeding more in maybe being a kingmaker in politics or running for office myself?
You know, it's very true. I'm not going to disagree with you that the way that some of these folks have been positioned within, you know, especially the deep alt-right, as I like to call them. You know, those are the same ones that are attacking Governor DeSantis right now. Everybody's forgetting how great he's done in the state of Florida and how successful the state of Florida is. They're just tearing him down because Donald Trump is tearing him down. So that's just how that crew goes. I just think Tucker's a little different. When you look at Tucker, he's been controversial, but he was untouchable until Monday morning. And now he's got this power where he's that guy that can rally an audience. He's educated. He knows the right things to say. At the end of the day, he is an entertainer. And I think everybody needs to be clear on that. All the Fox cases that involve the word Tucker Carlson in, Fox attorneys have responded, he's an entertainer, not a, you know, they don't consider him a political commentator. They consider him an entertainer. So at the end of the day, how much of this is an act? It's going to be difficult. I don't know if he could win. I mean, yes, he could go do that. And the GOP seems to be trying to figure out who's going to run besides Donald Trump. And everybody's going to get, you know, trashed by Donald Trump because that's what he does best to everybody on both sides. But Tucker seems to be different. And can Tucker find somebody and bring them up? Tucker, interestingly enough, has not got into this writing against DeSantis like everyone else has that's a diehard Trump supporter. So he does have that kingmaker about him that maybe he's not running for office, but definitely putting the right people together to get the word out. And I think who he supports at the end of the day is who a lot of those big, as they call them, MAGA people will follow, because they're the ones that are like, look at Tucker, look at Tucker.
Yeah.
He does. He has the ability to sway that audience.
Yeah. Eric, local conservative talk show host Larry Elder recently got into the presidential race. He has a big radio audience. I take it nothing compared to the audience that Tucker had on Fox News. If someone like a Tucker Carlson got into the race, could he pose a threat to Donald Trump? I can't help but think how interesting it might be to see the two of them on a debate stage.
I'd love to do that. But as Tucker said, they don't want a debate, right? Trump just came out and said he doesn't want to do primary debate. The Democratic Party, they don't want to expose Biden to any kind of questions that, I mean, we already saw today, small children confused our president. So they don't want that debacle. And it's interesting. Tucker has something unique. He's young. And I think that's the message that both parties want to say. We're looking for youth. And right now, the two focus points of mainstream media are two gentlemen that are 75 and 80 years old to lead our country. And there's really a youth movement out there. That's why you see Nikki Haley and Ron DeSantis' name sort of out there. Larry has, you know, he could, I don't know if he's going to make a difference. I mean, I think anybody that's not in the top two doesn't really make a difference. And that's not saying that they're not popular, but you just look at it out there. And can it? Absolutely. Tucker can cause a lot of frustration to Donald Trump, which would be interesting. And you're already seeing that with Robert Kennedy Jr. He's causing a lot of controversy out there because he could sway those votes, right? He's kind of waffling on the fence.
Right.
You know if he's going to be a Democrat or is he going to run independent? And he could take votes from Trump, too. So it makes it interesting where he doesn't have all the votes right there.
Eric, I want to ask you very quickly, because we are out of time here. Is there concern about the elephant in the room when it comes to Tucker Carlson? And I'm talking about the fact that the far-right supremacist movement in the country really idolized Tucker Carlson to some degree. And he did advocate for great replacement theory, that other races are replacing the white race or replacing the European who are supposed to be the masters of our culture, who have the best culture. Is there concern about that?
I would believe so. I would hope so. I would hope we don't forget. I mean, it seems that we have, you know, the elephant syndrome where we seem to like forgive and forget. I hope as a Republican that we start looking at folks with much better records. That's why I don't think Tucker could be president, because he has said these crazy things and these outlandish theories. Just look at Laura Loomer. There's a perfect example. We all know what she leans towards, and she's on Twitter living there talking about how great President Trump is. That's not somebody I want shouting from the rooftops for me. So I think Tucker does have that, and a lot of people will look at that. And, of course, that'll bubble to the surface, because that's what the media does best, is bubble up the things you want people to forget, make sure everybody remembers.
All right, Eric Mitchell, thanks so much for joining us. Republican strategist, president and CEO of LifeFlip Media.
If you're having trouble sleeping in the same bed with your significant other, you might want to think about divorce.
But not divorce. We're talking about sleep divorce. You know, explain what that is. Dr. Shelby Harris, director of sleep health at Sleepopolis, and Karen Asp, author and journalist who is in a sleep divorce right now. Thanks so much for joining us. So first question, Dr. Harris, what is a let me ask the person who's in a sleep divorce right now. Karen, what is a sleep divorce?
Well, I'm not the sleep expert, but I can tell you from having initiated the divorce, it's basically we've separated rooms when we sleep at night. And so my husband sleeps in one room and I sleep in another room. And that's it.
And how's the sleeping?
The sleeping is great. We initially separated because we have such different sleep schedules, and his sleep was interfering with my sleep, and it was really kind of getting a little crazy. So there are other issues that I'm now, you know, a menopausal woman and having aging parent issues. So the sleep has definitely kind of taken a turn for the south, but it is not now because of my husband.
Okay. And Dr. Harris, how popular are sleep divorces? And from your expertise, do they work?
You know, I think they are becoming more and more popular as people are talking about them more and more. It's funny, you know, there's this trend on TikTok that everyone's talking about called sleep divorce. We've been talking about it and recommending it for years in sleep medicine. I try to take away the term divorce because sometimes it has a negative connotation that people go against. So I want people to really make a conscious decision to sleep separately for the impact, positive impact on their sleep overall.
I think I've got a term. Let's call it non-contiguous sleeping.
Yes, there you go.
Does that work? Yeah, that way you take divorce out of it.
Yeah, my colleague Wendy Troxell calls it a sleep alliance, which I love that term. It really does. It's getting more and more popular, and people are really finding it reduces resentment. It brings some couples closer together because you feel better during your day. So I'm a big fan of a sleep alliance, as Wendy says. Whatever you can, as long as you both make it fair to both partners where you're sleeping, and fair arrangements, a bed, you have something comfortable that you both like.
Okay, Karen, I know you're not the expert on this, but when we talk about a sleep divorce, can you sleep separately in the same room? I'm thinking like two single beds, or is it best to sleep in separate rooms because one person might snore?
Well, again, I'm not the doctor here, but I can tell you just from experience traveling with my husband, you know, when we would travel, for instance, in Europe, and this is before we got a sleep divorce, you know, in Europe, they're famous for having, you know, separate duvets in the bed. So you kind of were a little bit separated at first. I think that if that works for you, that's great. But that wasn't a solution for my husband and me, largely because I get up, you know, roughly 2.5 hours before he does. He goes to bed later than I do. And I really like to have the lights on when I get up in the morning. So before we got our, I guess, sleep alliance, I was always waking up in the dark, literally, and having to stumble over my dog and having to set, you know, close out in the bathroom, close the door, things like that. So I guess it really just depends on what you're looking for. For us, it's better in separate rooms.
Okay, either of you can answer this question. I can tell you from experience, there are couples out there where if one couple has this idea, the other person in that couple is going to nix it right off the bat because there's a connotation like you're separating yourselves physically, and they don't like that for whatever reason. How do you bring it up to someone who might be a little reticent to try this?
I think in my situation, when I work with patients, I think the best way to bring it up is to come at a place of this is for our health.
Yes.
And if it's as long as it's something that one person is snoring a lot and they're not willing to work on it, right? But maybe they've tried some stuff and nothing's working and they just have very different sleep schedules or whatever it is, it's going to benefit them both in the long run. And it doesn't mean you still can't have intimacy in your relationship. You can snuggle together before you go to bed at night. You just, when you're actually going to roll over or go to sleep, you go to separate environments. But really the health and the emotional functioning that is improved with it is where I try to come at it.
Yeah, I can't help but think that the evening might begin in one room, nod, nod, wink, wink, and then you separate yourself.
I don't know what that means.
We'll leave it the, yeah.
Exactly.
I'm saying mum's the word.
Mum's the word.
There you go. All right. Thanks, guys. Dr. Shelby Harris, Director of Sleep Health at Sleepopolis, and also Karen Asp, who's an author and journalist, also currently in a sleep divorce right now. That's going to do it for KNX In Depth. We'll do it again tomorrow.